This is Jim Engster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with C. Denise Marcel, who is the District 7 councilperson on the East Baton Rouge Parish Metro Council. We have much to catch up with her about. And also on the show, Stanley Nelson, the editor of the Concordia Sentinel, who's been busily chasing these cold cases involving racially charged murders in Louisiana and in Mississippi. And we'll find out from him about a significant development in the Frank Morris case, the most celebrated and tragic, perhaps, of them all. Also, former LSU basketball great Randy Livingston is slated to be with us for a bit. Guy graduated from Newman High School, the school that produced Peyton Manning. Randy Livingston still involved with basketball, and he's coming this way. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Engster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It's 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Frank Barnett producing. And in just a few moments, we'll hear from C. Denise Marcel, the East Baton Rouge council person. But we start with Stanley Nelson. He is editor of the Concordia Sentinel. He's been with us many times through the years, writes frequently about the region's turbulent history, and one of the most tragic murders in 1964. This year will mark the 50th anniversary of the death of one Frank Morris, who died in Faraday, a man who was a business person, a black man who at 2 o'clock in the morning was held at gunpoint, and his business was torched, and he died a few days later of the burns that were a result of this attack. There have been some developments, and we are here to talk with the man who has followed this case and others quite vigilantly, Stanley Nelson. Good morning, Stanley.
Hey, Jim. Good morning.
What is the latest development, Stanley?
Well, the latest is that the Department of Justice has decided that there are no further place to take this investigation, and the case has been closed. It was reopened in 2007. The FBI had conducted an intensive investigation in the 1960s, and the DOJ basically concluded in their letter of closure to Frank Morris's granddaughter that there were basically six major suspects that they considered, and that all of those suspects are now dead.
One of them was still alive when you pointed him out as the man who most likely killed Frank Morris. Did the Justice Department take your allegations seriously?
Well, when family members of Leonard Spencer from Ravel told me that they had heard him and another man confess to the murder years ago, or to the arson. We began, when we were ready to run with that story, we went to the FBI in the fall of 2010, and they were also aware of these allegations as early as the summer of 2009, but for some reason had not, I don't know if they sat on it or whatever, but they certainly didn't move fast. And their investigation intensified in the winter of 2010 to 2011. And consequently, in May of last year, Mr. Spencer, who very vehemently denied having anything to do with the arson or knowing the other Klansmen, he died in May.
You talked to him, didn't you?
I did. I talked to him at length, sat on the front steps of his house while he sat in a swing. He was very open about his Klan membership, said his uncle was one of the Klan leaders in Ravel, and he had a great deal of knowledge about Klan wrecking crews, which were basically hit squads that were sent out to conduct various projects from arsons to cross burnings to violence. But he denied knowing the other Klansmen that was implicated, and he denied ever knowing anything about the Frank Morris arson. And the FBI basically concluded, or DOJ concluded, that other than the allegations of the family members, that they had no other evidence to corroborate what they maintained. And the FBI and Justice Department also noted that of the four suspects, 1960s that they had nothing else to corroborate that information. So basically you have allegations, but apparently the Bureau and Justice Department were unable to find any other sources to add to the case, and physical evidence in the case was very sparse from the beginning.
Well, Morris did not die immediately. He was in a hospital. He talked a little bit, didn't he?
He did. In fact, he lived 4 days. The fire occurred, like you say, around 2 o'clock. By a short time later, he was at the emergency room of the hospital, which was a mile away from the shop. And by 3:30, 4 o'clock that morning, an FBI agent by the name of Paul Lancaster, who was stationed in Alexandria, arrived in Faraday, and he and some other police officers conducted actually 3 interviews of Frank Morris, and Morris was able to say that he woke up in the middle of the night to the sound of breaking glass, that he went to the front of the shop, saw 2 white men, one with a shotgun, one with a gasoline can, asking what they were doing, and then one of the men apparently threw a match. He tried to get out the front door. The man with the shotgun pointed it at his head and told him to get back in the shop, so he had no alternative but to run back out of the flaming shop and emerge from the rear, where 2 Faraday police officers were pulled up about that time. They rushed him to the hospital. And so he said that those 2 men, both were white. 12 times he was asked by the FBI, who were they? He said he didn't know. There were some people, friends of his, that believed that he did know who his attackers were. But the most interesting thing to me was that of the many people who went and saw Frank Morris, and some of them including his father, who sat with him many hours, and his one of his best friends, a man named James White, he told these men that he didn't know who his attackers were.
You're convinced Spencer was involved?
I'm convinced that his family members, the story that they tell was very compelling, and what it did was connected him to a guy named Cooney Paso. And Cooney Paso was a Klansman who, the night before the Morris arson, was riding in a patrol car with Frank DeLauder, this notorious deputy from Concordia Parish. And Paso, who became an FBI informant, told the Bureau that DeLauder was furious with Morris primarily over a pair of cowboy boots that apparently Frank had ordered Frank DeLauder a pair of cowboy boots, and DeLauder didn't pay for it. And Frank Morris was upset about that and told the deputy he wasn't going to be able to do business with him anymore unless he paid his bills. And a retired FBI agent named John Pfeiffer, I think, really put the case in perspective. When you look at that day and during that era, for a black man to stand up to anyone, a white man, particularly a police officer, Pfeiffer's belief was that the major sin that Frank Morris committed, offense was of the offense of being uppity. In other words, acting as if he was equal or better than a white man by standing up to one. And it was Pfeiffer's belief that this was the trigger to the arson, that DeLauder was going to teach Frank Morris a lesson for being uppity, and that his intention probably was not to kill Frank Morris, but simply to burn his shop down. And as a consequence, whether Klansmen knew that his attackers knew that he would be in the shop that night or not, there's a lot of evidence that Morris had been warned not to be in the shop. And in fact, the story told by Spencer's family members was that both he and this other Klansman Posse, who they alleged committed the arson, did not expect anyone. They were shocked when someone came to the front of the store that night. And
well, Stanley, the fact that this case has been basically put to bed by the Justice Department, what does this do as far as the vigilance that you've had and others have had about chasing down these perpetrators of these terrible tragedies back in the 1960s?
Well, I think essentially Frank Morris' case, and we had another case one of the other cases we looked at was Joseph Edwards, who was also killed in 64. Basically, I think we're at the end of the road. I certainly can say that I don't have any other serious leads or any other suspects in mind. We've talked to hundreds of people since 2007. I have talked to people in cemeteries and churches and nursing homes and cotton fields, in homes and hospitals. And I just think that what we feared from the beginning was that time was against resolving these cases. I mean, consider the fact that Frank Morris now has been dead for 50 years. And so I'm, of the 100-plus cases that were reopened by the Bureau in 2007, there's virtually been no successes. And part of it, I think, is from a lack of urgency on the part of the Bureau, but the other is the simple enemy of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, this event, terrible tragedy, the 50th anniversary will be December 10th. Will there be any kind of remembrance of Frank Morris?
I expect there probably will be, and there's been some talk of maybe some memorial at the site. The interesting thing is that Frank Morris is shot. Of course, burned to the ground in 64, and the foundation, the concrete foundation of that shop, is still there exactly as it looked 50 years ago. If anybody ever drives through Faraday, you go right past that shoe shop. And so it's still there. It's amazing that it is. You can actually see the outline where Frank Morris's bedroom was, where he was asleep that night. And you can actually walk the foundation and take the route he took to the front door. It's both interesting and chilling to be able to do that today.
Well, it should have some kind of marker there, I think. And for people unfamiliar with the area, it's about 100 miles up the river right here from Baton Rouge. You drive down Highway 65, and you're right there. And all these years later, if it had not been for the man we're talking with, this story might have been long forgotten. Is there any satisfaction in the fact that at least you've put some spotlight on this?
Well, I did the best I could, and I think it's a newspaper's responsibility to follow these kind of cases. You know, I've been critical of DOJ and the FBI for not, I think having enough urgency in the cases. But, ultimately when you really reflect on it and you think about it, all of these cases, and there's, as I said, hundreds of them, happened in Faraday and in Natchez and in all these different places. And ultimately, it's really not the federal government's responsibility to solve these cases. It's actually the people that live in Faraday and Concordia Parish in Louisiana and Mississippi. It's our responsibility. Frank Morris was our neighbor. He was a businessman. And so I think ultimately we as local communities actually fail these folks. And because ultimately it is our responsibilities. And there's not a district attorney and not a sheriff, white or black, who has served in any county or parish where these crimes have occurred since 1960s. These are their cold cases. They don't belong to the federal government. They ultimately belong to these local communities. So there's a whole lot of people, I think, who failed. And basically, I just think it was just the communities that fail to do our best to find justice for these folks.
Well, Stanley Nelson has done magnificent work at the Concordia Sentinel. Today there's a story in the New York Times about how local newspapers are often beating bigger papers in big stories, and the bridge scandal in New Jersey, which has become a national story, was broken by a newspaper, The Record, a daily in northern New Jersey that covers Bergen County. And this story, which has relevance for anybody in the nation, was brought to light by the man we're speaking with, who lives in the community and at some risk, with vigilance, went after the story and continues to follow it, Frank Morris' death and others. And it's always a pleasure to talk with you, Stanley Nelson. We look forward to another exchange sometime soon, and certainly we look forward to talking with you in December for the 50th anniversary of the death of Frank Morris. Thank you, Stanley.
Thank you, Jim. Always good to be with you.
Take care. And we shall return with C. Denise Marcel. Much to talk about regarding the East Baton Rouge Council in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Our guest is Denise Marcel, elected to District 7 to serve a second term on the East Baton Rouge Parish Metro Council, and it has been an extremely interesting time for the council. Always is, but especially so in the past year. And we'll catch up with Denise Marcel about all the relevant things going on as we speak. And coming Friday, February 28th, 18 days from now, there will be a town hall discussion. Denise Marcel is the person orchestrating this, and the guest speaker, the headliner, is the Reverend Al Sharpton at the Greater King David Baptist Church, 222 Blount Avenue, and that's Friday, February 28th from 6 to 9 p.m., and hopefully we'll have a chance to talk with Reverend Sharpton on this show. But we were talking about a terrible tragedy in Faraday 50 years ago. We live in a violent community. We've discussed it many times here, and it's certainly a topic wherever we are in Baton Rouge. But on Terrace Avenue, about four blocks from where I live, Friday night, 5 o'clock, 18-year-old young man in a store, the grocery store there on Terrace. Apparently somebody was trying to steal his cell phone, and he fought back, and he got killed. That's symbolic of something going on in this community that's not so good.
Absolutely. You know, it saddens me that those types of murders continue to happen when we have people like Stanley Nelson who are trying to solve crimes that were committed by part of the Klan in the 1960s. So it has been the reverse that we're now killing ourselves. And so it's really saddens me that someone would even try to steal a cell phone, number one, and secondly, that they would shoot an individual for fighting back for his phone. I mean, it's really pathetic.
And the odds against something like this happening at that store are still quite remote, and I would encourage people who live in that area to frequent the location if you really want to show your courage and your commitment to Baton Rouge. Something like this should not affect a particular place of business. Now, we've talked on this show a few times through the years about Baton Rouge having a high crime rate. Perhaps not surprising, we have the highest rate of AIDS transmission in the United States. When Bobby Jindal, the governor, was asked about this at the press club a few weeks ago, he said he didn't know why. And he said he'd have to ask a public health official. He was former secretary of the Department of Health, and when that was noted, he said, well, I'm not an epidemiologist. Well, it has something to do with how it's transmitted, but it also has a lot to do with how we live. What can we do to thwart the epidemic of AIDS in Baton Rouge?
Well, one of the things that I find, Jim, is we have a lot of dollars that we use to give to people who are infected by the disease and not enough dollars to prevent the disease. So I think at some point we need to shift some of those dollars to the prevention of AIDS and the education of it rather than just having the money for people who are already infected by AIDS.
Well, this weekend was the National Black HIV/AIDS Weekend, and it's intended to bring focus on this, and most of the victims in Baton Rouge are African American, but this is something that afflicts people who are straight, who are gay, who are black, who are white, or male, or female. It's something that is out there, and it's not talked a great deal about, and it doesn't fit the narrative of the Louisiana miracle that the governor is going to use as his springboard for the presidency. But at some point, you would think that some brave soul out there would start talking about it a whole lot.
Well, I think so. I think we have to talk about it more. I think the stigmatism that goes along with it, we've got to educate people exactly of what it is, that you need to know your status, number one. And so we have to test more people and let them know that, you know, everybody needs to, number one, know their status. If you haven't been tested, then you're part of the problem, I feel.
Okay. What about condoms? Should we have distribution of condoms?
I believe so. I think so. I think, I don't promote young people having sex before marriage. However, they are doing that. So we need to do something about it to prevent it. And not just young people, all people. So I think if we provide them with condoms, that's one of the mechanisms by which we can cut down on the number that's so alarming, particularly in Baton Rouge, of AIDS. And Baton Rouge ranks fourth for AIDS cases in the largest metropolitan area in the U.S., but we're number one in the state of Louisiana. And so I don't want to be number one in that aspect.
Well, I've seen some reports showing we're number one in the United States, but if whether we're fourth or first, we're up there, and that's not a good thing. That's one list we'd rather not be at the top of. 297-5633 is your number, and I will forward some emails to C. Denise Marcel, councilwoman from East Baton Rouge Parish. Now, a listener notes, ironically named Stanley, name of our first guest, about the heroin problem we're having here in Baton Rouge. We've had the coroner on here, the district attorney, Ed Shahada, the criminologist, and all of them have noted that we've got more heroin deaths per capita than probably any other city in America. This was something brought to light with the death of Philip Seymour Hoffman. But it's occurring right here in our community.
Absolutely. And that's also happening at an alarming rate, the heroin. And I think it's probably easier for them to get at this point and may even be cheaper than crack cocaine. So it's getting going rampant.
And particularly lethal.
Correct. And it's lethal.
297-5633 is your number. We'll go to the phone lines, follow up with one emailed question, and then we'll get to some questions from some people who are holding. But another listener, Jordan, notes that you were a victim of crime. You talked about it on this show when you were running for state representative.
That's correct.
Was it a shooting?
No, I was stabbed.
Stabbed.
Correct.
And stabbed, you've got a pacemaker as a result of this, right?
Well, no, the defibrillator was because I have congestive heart failure. It had nothing to do with the stab wound, but I almost lost my life because the left ventricle to my heart was severed during the stabbing.
How did that affect you as a victim of crime?
As a victim of crime, it probably didn't affect me as much as it would other people. I dealt with it, went through it, forgave him for it.
Can you say him?
It was my husband.
My goodness.
So it was a domestic violence situation, and he's since gone on to be with the Lord, I would hope.
Did he go to jail?
Yes, he did.
297-5633, Dorian in New Orleans. Dorian, good morning. You're on with Denise Marcel.
Hi. Yes, I'm bringing attention to the fact that a Blue Cross Blue Shield, largest insurer in our state, and this is about HIV. They are skirting the law, which allows us to receive third party insurance payments for premiums.
All right. Have you heard anything about that, Blue Cross, and how they're dealing with AIDS patients?
No, I have not. But I would like to get that information if there's something that I could do to assist. I certainly would love to have that information.
Okay. Thank you, Dorian. 297-5633 for C. Denise Marcel. St. George, that's the biggest story of 2013 in Baton Rouge, according to The Advocate, and I would imagine it'll be the biggest story in 2014. Where's this going?
Well, I hope it doesn't go anywhere, Jim. You know, my position on it is that I think we're better together. I also believe that it would have a significant impact on the city. I want people to understand that people all over this parish has paid to build up the infrastructure in that particular area. And so to now say that we have the mall out there and you and I and everybody else goes to the mall and those tax dollars will not be going back into our parish, I think is wrong.
297-5633, 877-217-5757 for Denise Marcel. Russ on Acadian. Hi, Russ. You're on the air.
Just a question, just in general about annexation. Why haven't these areas been annexed in the past? I don't quite get. Seems like they should have been annexed into the city, and that not only St. George area, but there are other areas that probably should have been.
Well, Rush, apparently you've been following C. Denise Marcel. I tried to do that about a year and a half ago, and I didn't get much support from my colleagues. In fact, I got, like, almost no support from my colleagues. That was one of the things that I talked about, annexing those areas. And I was actually even told that, you know, that wasn't even my district that I was trying to annex. And what people did not understand at that particular time, not only the area that we're talking about that they want to have St. George in, but also other pockets in the city and out near Glen Oaks don't get to vote on a lot of the issues that come before us because they are not annexed in and they are unincorporated areas. And a lot of people are not aware of it. It's not in my district, but I feel like at some point it will affect everybody in this parish. And that's why I pushed to have the annexation piece about a year and a half ago.
Do you think this is a real threat?
I think that it's a threat that we should take serious, and I think a lot of people that live in the area, and I'm glad that they're forming their own organization to say that they don't want to be a part of it. Part of the issue for them with education is they will not be able to go to Baton Rouge High School and South Downs and some of the schools that we offer special services, and so they feel like they are getting a good education. And, of course, that's the drawback of having your own school system. You won't be able to attend schools here.
297-5633 for C. Denise Marcel. And what can the Metro Council do, if anything, to be in favor of this or against it?
Well, I think a part of the issue is some of the people who represent, some of the council members that represent a part of that district, they're kind of torn. I think Buddy Amoroso is standing in the middle of the road. He's heard from people that don't want it. He's also heard from people who wants it. And regardless of whether or not they really want it as a council person, I think a part of it is fear that people will come after their seats. And so, you know me, Jim, I don't fear that kind of stuff. So I guess we have to remove the fear and do what's best for the city and the parish as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are people who are gung-ho in favor of this and are just as passionate on the other side as you. I've asked Woody Jenkins to be on this show. Bodie White has been on the program, to his credit, and hopefully we'll have the proponents as often as we have the opponents. But do you think they have a point, or are they way out in left field on this?
I believe that they are way out in left field.
What prompted this? Was it because it was, be the schools that they may get the city and not the school system they were desiring?
Absolutely. I think that that's what prompted it, the schools, when they wanted their own school district and were somebody said to them, well, you're not your own city like Central, and somebody took that and ran with it. I think it's a bad idea. It doesn't set a great precedent. I think that at some point, if we allow people to continue to do this, what stops Country Club from wanting to be their own city? I think the city will bankrupt.
Chuck on Airline. Chuck, good morning. You're on with Denise Marcel.
Good morning. This may be slightly off topic, but I'm just wanting to comment about the very cowardly tactic that the Metro Council uses when proponents of some kind of change show up and they defer it and continue to defer it so that people don't have their day in court, so to speak. I'll take the answer off the air.
You can stay along if you want, Chuck.
Okay.
All right. Is the Metro Council cowering in the corners while people are trying to conduct business before the council?
No, and I believe that the issue that he may be talking about was a couple of weeks ago. The mayor pro tem made the decision to defer it because they didn't have the votes for the proponents, sir.
What issue was that?
That's probably the St. George Fire Board that he's referring to. Am I correct, sir?
Well, yes, but I personally went through about a 4.5-year deal with the council, and I would have, you know, dozens of people show up, and the thing would be deferred. And it wasn't because of any lack of votes. It was because they didn't want the proponents to be heard.
Well, I'm certainly not for that, and I was not privileged to whatever you're talking about for 4.5 years. Mm-hmm. I'm not I don't know exactly what you're talking about, but I know I've never participated mm-hmm. in just having people come down to the council and actually, you know, postponing that matter. And because I understand that people take their time out to be heard, and I think everybody should be heard, whether I'm for the item or not.
297-5633 for Denise Marcel, if you'd like to talk about St. George or anything else. Where does CAT stand right now?
Well, I believe that they've turned somewhat the situation around, and I'm not sure of where they're going to be on the tax issue. I know that that's being appealed once again. I know that so many of those dollars are being held from them. As I told you before, Jim, I think it's unrealistic for the public to believe that you could give the same thing that you offered with less money. It just doesn't happen.
Okay. Now, so we've had people on this show like Adam Knapp, who's a big proponent for the tax that passed. The president of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber said he'd never ridden the bus in Baton Rouge. Have you ridden the bus?
Yes, I have.
What's it like?
Well, I've ridden the bus a number of times. Recently, I've not ridden the bus, but a few years ago I did, and it takes a long time to get to where you were going. However, I think that's a part of what they were trying to correct and the dollars that they needed. They were the most underfunded system, one of the most underfunded systems, and so it took a long time to get in that hole, and I think it takes a while to come out of it.
Well, the tax was bandied by some as a panacea. It's been hardly that, so you can understand the frustration, can't you?
Yes, I can understand the frustration, but I can also understand that the dollars that they anticipated that they would get and they did not get, then that leaves a gap in the services that they say they were going to provide. It's just that simple to me. And, of course, they've gone through a change in administration and folk mm-hmm. They had several issues with the board. I'm not on the board. I don't know all the ins and outs of that and how that transpired. But there were some issues with the board and how they selected management contracts, and I think that was an issue.
I liked Brian Marshall, the guy who kind of was the scapegoat, and some say for good reason, but he had seen a good transportation system in Chicago and was trying to implement something like that here, and he didn't get the job done. But do you think he got a raw deal?
Of course I do.
Why?
Well, because I think that he was the person on a great report card. How do you not give somebody a great grade for getting the tax passed? That was the first issue for me. And then secondly, if there was some issues before the tax pass, he was great. And after the tax pass, he had to go. So that's just my thought on it.
We'll return to the phone lines with C. Denise Marcel. What does the C stand for, by the way?
Clara.
Clara Denise Marcel, Councilwoman for East Baton Rouge Parish, back in 90 seconds on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. C. Denise Marcel is with us for a bit longer. Councilwoman, District 7, East Baton Rouge Parish Metro Council, HB in Denham Springs. HB, good morning.
Good morning. Yesterday's paper had a quite long article about the city of Central and the trials and tribulations they went through to become a city, and it seems like from the article that they're doing quite well. My question is this, is that in a democracy, do not the people deserve the right to choose their own destiny when it comes to electing officials and their form of government for a certain specified area?
Well, I do believe that people have the right to vote on issues that they think that are important to them. However, I believe that when it has a negative impact on an entire parish that has put monies into that, how do you select them as the only voters when it's going to affect everybody? So in other words, if I've put my money into a checking account with my husband and then we decide to split, then how does he get to make all of the choices on the money? And I don't get a voice in it. Just, I mean, I don't know any other analogy to use.
All right. Charles on North Foster. Charles, good morning. You're on with Denise Marcel.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Councilwoman. I have two concerns, and I think most voters are probably wondering this. You see Road Runner towing commercials. I think there was an issue with the driving school. It looks like the city of Baton Rouge has certain select vendors for services. I mean, the Road Runner police, they say they're the only ones for the Baton Rouge City Police. Why is that? And the guy who runs the traffic school, he seems to think he should be the only person to have that option for the entire parish, and I disagree. And the last question is, Bob Marabito, who is the CEO of CATS, I thought he was only supposed to be the interim CEO. Is there a search or a proactive search in the planning to find a real transportation CEO for CATS?
Which question first? Bob Marabito. I believe that what the board did, and again, I don't serve on that board, is gave him a raise, and as far as I know, they're not looking for another person to head the transportation at CATS. I think that you're correct. He was supposed to be interim, and I thought that we would look for someone with more transportation skills, but I don't serve on that board, and I don't get to vote for that. So that's one question. The other question that you brought up was about businesses coming to the table to share at the Metro Council. And if you've been watching, I support that. I support diversity. I support people being able to come to the table to offer services. That's something a lot of times that has to do with maybe the administration could be choose those people for some of the contracts, and some of it is bid. It depends on which entity you're talking about. If it's a bid, then you have to follow the public bid law. If it's something that we mm-hmm. could select, then I think at that point, you when it comes to the council, you have to have the votes. Even if you were qualified for the job and I wanted to put you on there, I have to have six other people just like me to give you that contract.
297-5633 is your number. Mariba in Bro Bridge. Hi, Mariba. You're on with Denise.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning, Councilwoman.
Good morning.
Denise Marcel. I want to go back to the issue that Orion called about from New Orleans concerning Blue Cross and Blue Shield.
Okay.
Blue Cross and Blue Shield issued a statement Friday that they will not accept third-party payments for people who are connected to the State Department of Health and Hospitals program to facilitate coverage for people with AIDS and HIV infections. I think it's fair to say that this is a public health issue.
All right. Well, it may very well be, Mariba, but I think the better guest to ask this question would be somebody from Blue Cross, not for Ms. Marcel.
What's your concern and my question?
My question is, as a councilwoman who's clearly concerned about the transmission of HIV infections and slowing the transmission of the rate, if the largest carrier in our community is refusing to participate with the state in a program, does this not undermine our effort to slow the transmission of AIDS?
I do believe that would undermine our efforts to slow the transition of AIDS. Again, I was unaware of the statement that was issued. I'm privileged to a lot of information, and some of it gets by me. I'm certainly going to look into that and see from the city standpoint what we could do. But, I mean, more importantly, what can we do as a community to say to Blue Cross that this is unacceptable?
Well, and also, what can we do to stop people from contracting?
Absolutely.
And Blue Cross certainly is not involved with that.
No, but I mean, if what he's saying is that they're not going to be a third-party payer for people who are already contracted AIDS, HIV, then that's going to be a real problem.
Okay. But healthcare, as we know, is a morass, has been and continues to be, and perhaps
Absolutely.
More so, and Blue Cross has been weaving through this morass. They've got some fine people who work there, and we'll see what happens. And this may be a nationwide thing. I would imagine that if something has changed that dramatically in Louisiana, it follows the trend of what's going on around the country. And
I think people still need to speak to that. What, you know, they need to have a voice to that.
Okay. 297-5633. What about the ordinance that John Delgado says he will present to stop discrimination in Baton Rouge? It would include sexual orientation. Would you be in favor of that?
Let me just say that that's kind of weird to hear that, because that's the ordinance that I'm working on, and I think it should be presented in 2 weeks. Perhaps he's going to co-sponsor it. I didn't have any clue.
Well, that would mean there are probably two votes for it, no matter who sponsors. But you're going to go forward with it?
I've actually asked the parish attorney to put it on the agenda. And so, as a matter of fact, I have a meeting today. And I was unaware of anything that John Delgado was doing.
That was the word. In fact, he was on this show.
Okay.
When we had the...
I didn't know that.
The incident involving the sheriff's office.
Right,
and
but
my
ordinance includes everyone, non-discrimination for white, black, sexual orientation, religion. It covers everybody. And we already have that policy. I was just transforming that into a law.
Do you think it'll pass?
I would hope so. I would think that most of the council members want to do something to lessen discrimination to anyone. I know that myself, I don't want to see anyone discriminated against.
Well, it was hard. In fact, it was not only hard, it was unsuccessful to get a One Baton Rouge resolution, had no teeth.
Let me just tell
how's
you.
How's this going to
Well, fly? let me just tell you this. Many of us didn't support One Baton Rouge because it was targeted at one group of people. And that was my issue with it. I don't believe that we need to set up a law to specifically for one. I think everybody, and that's what I said at that time, and that's why I was going to offer the law. So it protects not only gay and lesbian couples, but it protects white and black. It protects you whether you're with Farrakhan or Jesus. It protects you, you know, so whether you're Catholic or Presbyterian. I just think that we shouldn't discriminate against anyone. But I don't think that I should get a group pass a law that says we're not going to discriminate against any radio show host like Jim Inkster or, you know, or whomever, because that's a specific group. And I think it was narrow, and I think that was the issue. And when it broadens and it covers them, I think everything will be okay.
Were you in favor of the One Baton Rouge resolution?
And that's why I did not, because I don't think that one group, that's what I was saying. I don't think that we should set it up where we're, because then you can come to me and say, look, I think that the radio show hosts have been discriminated against, and I think we need an ordinance to protect us from the public or anybody. I just use that because I'm here, of course, Jim.
Okay.
But I'm saying that I think it should cover more than them, and that's why I wanted it to be broader.
297-5633, Ben on Perkins. Hi, Ben. Good morning. You're on the air with Denise Marcel.
Good morning. I have a question and a comment. I can start with the comment first. Last year, I noticed that a lot of these landscapers are taking the leaves and the grass clippings and such and just blowing it into the street. The city of Baton Rouge and the parish of East Baton Rouge is spending well over $1 billion to upgrade the sewer system. And I feel that this is, these grass clippings, leaves get into the street, come a rain, washes into the sewer system, and it's clogging it up.
All right. All politics are local. what about leaves getting into the sewer system? Is that going to mess up the billion-dollar project?
I don't believe that will mess up the billion-dollar sewer system. However, I think that we need to take caution whenever we're blowing leaves or trash and try to prevent that from happening.
All right. And I've been informed by Frank that Randy Livingston will not be able to be with us in the remainder of our hour. So we'll go the full distance with Denise Marcel. If you have a question for her, 877-217-5757 or 297-5633. She has been at the forefront of trying to thwart violence in our community. And you live in which zip code?
70802, 70805.
Those are the districts you represent.
I represent. I live in 70802.
And that's the second most
correct
violent.
Correct.
Yeah, I noticed. I think 70808 didn't have any murders last year, and when you look at it, it is remarkable how many are in these two zip codes.
Correct.
So you're right there in the middle of all this.
Yes, I am.
Wade at Louis. Hi, Wade. You're on the air with Denise Marcel.
This is. I appreciate you taking. This is a quick comment to clarify something about the leaves in the street. Those leaves don't go into the sewer system. They go into the stormwater system. There's two different systems, and the sewer only handles sewer, and it's a closed system. It goes from the residence all the way to the sewer treatment plant and does not take in any stormwater. And the leaves just go into the stormwater system.
Okay. Thank you, Wade, an enlightened patron of Louis. 297-5633. 877-217-5757 for Denise Marcel, Councilwoman, District 7, East Baton Rouge Parish, zip code 70802 and 70805. Charlotte in Iberia. Hi, Charlotte. You're on the air.
Hello, Denise. Hello to Councilwoman. I'm calling to ask whether the parish can indicate to the people who want to start the City of St. George that they're welcome to do so after they repay the parish for the improvements they've made.
All right.
Okay, yeah, you're talking about some of the legacy cost and the infrastructure, and you know, I agree with you, and I don't think that they would be able to write that check. That's why I don't think it's fair.
Okay. Thank you, Charlotte, and of course, the city has been involved, hasn't it, in a lot of the enhancements in what would be the fifth largest city in Louisiana?
Absolutely. Not only that, there were state dollars, that tax credits that went out to support the creation of the new hotel that's in that area as well. So we got a lot of tax credits out there. We got a lot of money.
Is that the Renaissance?
Correct.
Okay. Sam in North Baton Rouge. Hi, Sam. You're on the air with Denise Marcel.
Good morning. I have a quick question. I'm a student at Southern, also a resident of Scotlandville. And I was listening to the comments earlier about the food desert in North Baton Rouge. My question would be to Councilwoman Marcel, what can be done about the proliferation of establishments that basically serve alcohol? It may be registered as a grocery store, but the primary business that they're doing is serving alcohol. And there have been numerous studies between the correlation of establishments that serve alcohol and crime and violence in the area. And it seems like our area is oversaturated with these types of establishments. What can be done concerning that?
Thank you for your question. I think it was about four of us, or maybe five, that had a committee doing a study on the proliferation of alcohol in these particular areas and what identifies a grocery store and what identifies a liquor store. So those things have never really been clear on the books. So if you have a license to sell alcohol, it's almost as if you don't have a certain amount of groceries that you have to serve. So we have been working to identify what can be considered as a grocery store versus a liquor store. And to be quite honest with you, a lot of the stores that are opening up, they already have the zoning to be what they are, to sell the alcohol. So the question becomes, what do we do to not open up maybe new ones or give additional licenses? But again, you have to have 7 votes on the council to do that. I know that Ronnie Edwards have worked hard in her area not to allow them to open up additional stores. We have laws on the books. What people need to understand in the community is that we're following the laws that are on the book. So I can't fight against you opening up a store, because it then becomes discrimination if the law is on the book and you followed everything according to the law. And so that's the issue, mm-hmm. and that's the thing that we struggle with daily. I have to be fair to this store as I was to that mm-hmm. store, but at the same time, we need to set up what identifies a store versus a liquor store and what you have to sell.
We're short on time, so we won't be able to get to any more calls, but the anti-discrimination ordinance, you say it'll come up at the next council meeting?
I meet with them today to see when they're going to put it on, and I think they're going to introduce it in 2 weeks.
2 weeks. And Friday, February 28th, Al Sharpton, Denise Marcel, and I'm sure hundreds of others will be at the Greater King David Baptist Church at 222 Blount Avenue. For more information, 775-2343. That's
or they can contact my office, 389-3182. It's a town hall discussion about AIDS, and AIDS is a civil rights issue.
With Al Sharpton. Very good. Thank you, and we'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.